Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This Independence Day, wrap yourself in comfort and freedom with Minky Couture. From stars, stripes, and snuggles to cozy classics, our luxury blankets are proudly made to comfort. Whether you're watching fireworks or hosting backyard barbecues, be proud to be cozy all summer long. Celebrate comfort. Celebrate freedom. Celebrate you. Shop now at minkycouture.com and make your 4th of July unforgettably cozy.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to ft.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 861. It's the 1st of September 2017. On the podcast today, I have John Peters, Managing Director of Strategic Minerals, that's SML. And John talks about the recommencing of drilling at their Hans Camp project and also talks share options. Plus, I also have financial analyst with Spreadex, Connor Campbell, talking about Barratt Developments, Bovis Homes, and Go Ahead Group, who are all reporting results next week. And I have today suggested one for your watch list, which is Touchstone Exploration, TXP ticker, submitted by TID83. Thanks very much for that. Don't forget, anything you hear in this podcast is not intended as investment advice, just information on which to base your research.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Peters, Managing Director of Strategic Minerals, ticker there is SML. John, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Justin. I'm back.
Yeah, well, do you know what? I thought it was just like a week or so ago we talked, but since we last spoke, and you pointed out, there's been three news releases, so we'll get to those in a bit. But as always, John, for people new to the podcast or new to investing and not heard of your company, can you explain what Strategic Minerals is all about, please?
Yeah, look, Strategic Minerals is a diversified resources company, and it's pretty unique, particularly on AIM, in that we're actually a profitable one. We've got a cash flow that comes in from an operating asset, which is a magnetite stockpile in New Mexico. And as I keep on telling the market, I keep on trying to let them know that it's going to be producing some pretty big numbers. And in July, I mentioned we'd hit sales records. I can tell you, you know, we'll wait and see what August, which should come out soon, is going to look pretty good, I reckon. And I think the market will really get a bit of an eye-opener as to how much money we're actually making out of those things. And the beauty about that is that means we're free then, one, not to have to go to the market to raise money to keep the lights on. Mm-hmm. But more importantly, we recycle that money into projects where we believe are going to add value to shareholders. And so with that, we then have a brownfield site, which is in England, which is in Cornwall, which is a tin tungsten mine, and that's Redmore, which is due to have some results out shortly. Mm-hmm. And then also we've got some straight green greenfields mm-hmm. sites in Western Australia, where we've just started some re-drilling, which is part of what it is. And that covers, those tenements cover a number of possible materials. The ones where we're drilling at the moment are nickel-based, although we've also found some reasonable cobalt deposits, and that's what we're looking at the moment. And also we've got some prospects for both gold and rare earths. So We're pretty across the board. Plus, we've got a proven history of being a bit of a corporate, doing corporate transactions. So we don't just sit around with one project trying to work it through. We try to get a portfolio approach so that in metals and minerals that we think price-wise will do well over the near future. So it's not just a scattered gun approach. It is selected, but it's also done in a way to try and make sure we've got a portfolio approach to increasing shareholder value.
Yeah. Well, let's get into that last bit of news you mentioned there. Drilling sort of recommencing at Hans Camp Cobalt Nickel Project. Take us through the details of that, John, if you could.
Yeah, look, that started a couple of days ago, and we're probably about halfway through it already because it's only very, it's only shallow drilling. It's down to about 200-250 meters, and they do what they call air core, so they don't have to use diamond drills, which are very expensive. These are reasonably inexpensive, and what they do is they do a grid-like pattern over about 1.2 square kilometers, which is quite a large area, if you can imagine. And from that, we're looking to test that for potential cobalt deposit that we picked up, but also nickel laterite, which is not nickel sulfide, which we were looking for and we still believe is down at the lower levels, but is also maybe a reserve in itself that we can turn into money as well. So, you know, in the end, of course, the game is that we're mainly looking to find something that's worth value to either develop or to sell on. And, you know, in that regard, I said it's not an overly expensive one. It'll take a couple of weeks to drill. It'll probably take a month to 6 weeks then to get the results out. So, you know, in next quarter, we'll be giving the results of that as well, and we'll be talking about what we'll be doing going forward. But the luxury for us is beginning of this year, we took out our other shareholder in this, the joint venture partner. So we control it now. And it gives us a good avenue to rework some of the money that we're getting out of Cobre into projects like this. Not just, not only make a profit, but make that profits on it. So, you know, we're very happy with that. And of course, we're following a similar strategy with the one in Redmore in Cornwall, where we're pretty close to completing the first round of drilling. We're going to put some results out soon on some of the assays we've received back, and we're looking at what we can do there. But, you know, that's a much bigger project that will take time, but I sort of call it my juggernaut.
Yeah. Well, you must seem quite happy and confident on most of the projects going on there, because announced recently also you've exercised some share options, John, haven't you?
Yeah, we... I don't know if you remember. In fact, you were interviewing back in those days too. But we started off, I took on this role about 2.5 years ago, a bit over 2.5 years ago. And at that stage, we're down at about 0.4 of a P and we didn't look like we had a project. And we set some targets of 1.5P and 3P for vesting with an exercise price of a P. Per thing. At the moment, we're sitting around 2p, but we've been as high as 3.5 or 3.7 or something. I've got quite a number of options vested. And the truth is, I believe my story very much, so much so, I've just put £100,000 more into it. Yeah. So that's taken me from previously I'd paid for 10 million shares myself, and now I've paid for another 10 mil, so I've now got 20 million shares. So I'm probably just sitting around 2% of the company or so. And, you know, and we'll look to build on it, to be perfectly honest. But as you know, it's a bit of a double-edged sword when you're an executive like this, because you get the right to get these with some, maybe some inherent value in them, but of course you can't sell them because that gives too bad a message to the market. So when you do this, you are a long-term holder, and I am a long-term holder. So that's the case. And, of course, that led into the other announcement we had.
Yeah, well, a proposed directors and management options program targeting marketing cap of 100 million and a share price of 10 pence. And at the moment, like I say, you are at 2.10, and the market cap is about 20, just under 27 million. So that's a good bit of upside there.
Well, again, look at it. When we did the other ones, we were probably about 2 million market cap. So we've increased our market cap tenfold in two and a half, three years. And, you know, I won't say that it's all just fantastic management. It's good management, a bit of luck, a bit of judicious planning, you know, a bit of the fact that we can sit through cycles. This is very important. If you can sit through cycles on resource stocks, then you normally do very well. So here, what I wanted to do is after we got through and we vested all the other existing options, people were coming to us saying, well, what are you doing next? What are you going to do? What's your targets? Where are you going? You know? And I was very keen not to break up the team that we've got going at the moment. Now, we've got a team between a management group and our board of directors. Our board of directors get actively involved, and they really are. They're a big help to me. But when we went to do this, we said, well, look, if we're going to reward the whole board, right, it's only fair that shareholders vote on this, right? Mm. This should not be – I've seen too many. There's so many I name where I've seen the board just allocate – and I've got to say, even our first lot, we did it. We just allocated it. Mm-hmm. It's not fair that shareholders don't have a right to vote on things like that. Because, yes, there is a dilution, but the way we've set it up, it dilutes, but by the time we dilute, you've made – you've made a lot more than the case. And in fact, we've set each of the tranches up, and I recently provided a chart on it showing that the directors and management would make about 10% of the increase in value that shareholders would receive in any period. Mm-hmm. And so it really is a profit. It's a way to do a profit sharing thing that doesn't cost you money, but the market wears the cost. Yeah. So to me, I think that's very, very important to align your management, and more so align them over a reasonable period. You don't want them just, in 6 months' time, they get a bonus. Well, that's no good, because it takes you time to build wealth.
Yeah.
And that's what we've got to try and do.
Absolutely, yeah. Very interesting. Nice to hear your side of it, because, I mean, I often, looking at companies myself to invest in, that's one of the big boxes I need ticked. Are the management aligned to the shareholders? Do they believe in the project? Are they investing their own money into the project? If not, why? Why do they expect other people to risk their capital and not risk theirs? It's always important.
Justin, I think I might have said this before, but I used to, through my career, mm-hmm. one of the jobs I had, I used to manage about $7 or $8 billion worth of funds. Mm-hmm. And when we looked at companies, we used to say, poor management can take a good company to no good in 6 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So unless you had a good management, you don't invest. Forget it. As someone once said to me, it's bad enough having a crook as a partner, but when you have a smart crook as a partner, you have a lot of trouble.
Yeah, exactly. Excellent, John. So anyone listening to this and likes that advice, as well as everything else you've talked about on the podcast here, but they're not following you yet on Vox Markets, keep going. Give them three reasons why they should hit that follow button.
Okay, well, first, obviously, the most important one's always value. We're trading at the moment around 2.210. We went up to about 3.75. I believe we'll probably kick on. I keep on saying it. We will get to 100 mil in the time frame I've said, 100 million pounds, maybe even earlier, but I try to set reasonable targets. But the value, we had SP Angel did an updated notice on it. I think they've got our value somewhere between about 2.6 and 3.5, I think, P. Right at the moment, I think they may even be undervaluing us. So I think we're a value proposition. I think we've got great growth opportunities in the assets that we've got. Plus, we've got a history of undertaking corporate activities to enhance growth. Mm-hmm. And lastly, of course, I believe we've got a very good ethical and balanced team of directors and management, and with a proven record of performing. So I think that's all those are the three reasons why I'd say to buy our stock.
Excellent, John. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again soon. Thanks very much.
Looking forward to it, Justin. Bye-bye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Connor Campbell, financial analyst at Spreadex. You all right, Connor?
Very good, thank you.
Now, it's the end of the week, very short week, and it's been quite nice, actually, isn't it?
yeah, it has.
So we're looking forward to some of the releases next week from the bigger companies. So who are we starting off with, Connor?
Starting off with Barratt Developments on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. It's a house builder heavy week next week. I've got another stock that we'll be talking about that's a house builder as well. There's Barratt this week, next week. There's Berkeley Group. There's Bovis Homes, which I'll talk about in a second. Yeah. The sector's been very, very strong this year. And it's sort of, as we'll see, regardless of the issues at each company, the overall trend has been you know, for them to keep climbing, especially in the last few weeks, I'd say last 2 months maybe, there's been a substantial sort of move higher from a lot of the house building stocks. To be honest, for Barratt, it makes sense. Its figures have been pretty strong throughout the year. Started off in February, its half year figures, there was a 9% rise in pre-tax profit. It hiked its interim dividend 22% to 7.3p per share. In May, it said for its sort of financial year, it would be completing the most homes it had completed since, I think, 2008, so a 9-year high. And it said that the sector remained good despite there being some signs of softness. I think one of the main issues really for the sector at the moment, and you saw this at the start of August, that a lot of house building stocks took a dip, was is Help to Buy. Help to Buy has been a huge boost for the sector, especially a company like Barratt. And there was reports in early August that the government might be looking to end Help to Buy earlier than initially stated. Mm-hmm. I think if that were to happen, then you might see some of the house builders tumble away from their current highs, really. But, you know, as it stands at the moment, it all looks good. In July, Barratt said that its full-year average selling price was up nearly 6% to £275,000 per home. I think it's expected to next week to increase its pre-tax, like full-year pre-tax profit by 12% to £765 million. I think one issue that might affect sort of the market reaction to that update is that it said for 2018 it expects modest growth. Now, if it expands on that, I think that could be something to look out for. It has said, though, that it's not about sort of any issues with the sector or on the demand side of things, but rather that it's fears about having enough skilled workers. And it did say that it was an industry-wide trend. We've seen some other companies, you know, have the same issue, really. And, you know, that skilled worker thing, is the skilled worker problem has been one for a while, and it seems like it might, you know, impact on its 2018. But, you know, most of the financials for the company have been very strong. The one thing is, though, that it's creeping towards £6.25, and a couple of times this year it's got to that level and then fallen away, and it hasn't been able to break through. So I'm not quite sure what it'll need to say next Wednesday for investors to be willing to take it above that level.
Yeah, well, a major top was it July of last year, July, October, towards October as well, between those at £6.40, didn't manage to get over that, then sunk towards the Brexit gap down, but it's climbed back towards that level now, so I'd be interested to see. There's some breaking news, there's some good news there. You know, UK manufacturing PMI is coming at 56.9. It was estimated to be 55.
Wow, that's a big jump.
And previous was 55.3, but estimated to drop to 55. It's gone up to 56.9. So
the estimates have been all over the place this year. I think only a couple have been accurate, and they've been, you know, that's the latest in some really wild swings in terms of, like, divergence between analyst estimates and what actually comes in.
Yeah, so that's not too bad. I did own Barratt Development once, a good company there, of the house builders. Them, Persimmon, I quite liked a lot. And you're going to mention Bovis next, is that the one?
Yeah, Bovis Homes, yeah.
Because that was the one I sort of shied away from, and they had issues. But still, you know, along with, I think, the sentiment of house builders, it hasn't been doing too badly after there were a couple of dodgy releases, didn't they, where they said, didn't they pay, was it some kind of scandal about paying something or fees?
To be honest, all of their releases this year haven't been great. Yeah, it's basically at a two-ish year high. Like, it's finally crawled above 10.50, I think, today. It's again, like I was saying, it sort of speaks of the strength in the mind of investors of the housing sector at the moment, that Bovis, a company that has been plagued with issues in the last, you know, 9-10 months, you know, at the end of last year it issued that profit warning on the 28th of December, which is a bit cheeky to stick it in then in 9th of January its CEO David Ritchie departed abruptly. Then it turned out 2 days later the reason why was that the company had been paying customers basically to move into unfinished houses, and that is what led to in February revealing that it was having to pay out $7 million to, you know, repair the homes of customers that it basically they'd ushered in these customers into unfinished houses to try and meet their sales targets. And that's what, you know, you see that they suffered a huge 11% drop in February. That's the reason why, basically. Since then, you know, there's been a lot of drama around the stock. It had those takeover offers from Galliford Try and Redrow, rejected both of them. And then in May said that cost it £2.8 million in advisory services, basically. In the end, you know, it lost out on that money because it rejected both bids. In July, it said that it had to pay out another £3.5 million, taking it to £10.5 million in terms of house fixes and things like that. It's also said that it's cutting production for 2017 by 10 to 15%. That's to try and avoid the same sort of target-chasing issues that plagued its 2016 and led it to some unsavoury behaviour, let's say, in terms of, you know, paying people to go into unfinished houses. But again, like we said, it's still, you know, by and large kept rising. It had a few hairy moments in the first few months of the year, but since then, despite, you know, a string of payouts it's had to make, it still kept climbing. This next Thursday could be a fairly big report for Bovis. It's its half year report. I think first and foremost, Has it had to pay out any more money in terms of those house fixes? Is it now that it's paid out that £10.5 million and that's it? Or is it going to have to pay out another couple of million? Is this going to be something that affects it for the next few updates going forwards? There's also, you know, it appointed a new CEO in April, Greg Fitzgerald, who used to be CEO of Galliford Tribe before he retired in 2014. I think next Thursday is expected to be his new strategy. It's his first major update as the new CEO. I think, you know, back in July and May, there wasn't enough time for him to have done much. Now I think investors are going to be looking for some firm details in terms of what is his vision for Bovis Homes. And then I think they'll want some kind of update on pre-tax profit forecasts. I think at the moment for the year, pre-tax profit is expected to be down around 20% compared to 2016. Investors will want either signs that is what it's going to be, or maybe a bit better, and hopefully, you know, they won't say it's any worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, look at the chart. It's almost exactly a mirror image, you know, not a mirror image, but I mean, exactly the same as Barrett, which is, I suppose, a better company. Yeah. But yeah, it's not quite as the highs, but I mean, Bovis got to like 12 quid last year, and I might say in between July and October. And again, it was, you know, slowly grinded lower towards that Brexit vote and it gapped down. And then again, it's been climbing. It's now towards 10.50 odd. So it is getting towards those highs again. So maybe we'll see. You know, this is a pivotal point, really. Okay, anything else, Connor?
Yeah, finally we've got Go Ahead Group, which, among other things, runs Southern Rail, you know, the most despised train line in the country for good reason. If you look at the chart, it's had an absolutely shocker of a year, and most of its issues can be traced back to Southern, basically. In February, its half-year results were the 24% drop in the space of a week or two in the aftermath of that half-year report. And that's because it issued a profit warning. I think for the half-year, pre-tax profits were down 11% to £67 million. They're expected to be, you know, continue to be impacted in the second half of the year, mainly due to the strikes at Southern. There was those protracted strikes over months at the railway, you know, huge untold issues for commuters and things like that. And that has, you know, come to impact Go Ahead's performance. Since then, sort of, Southern has continued to be a problem. Southern falls under Govia Thameslink, and in April it said for the first 9 months of the year, passenger journeys at Govia Thameslink were, unsurprisingly, they were down 3.5% on the year. However, it did see a rise at London Midland. I think the passenger journeys there for 9 months were up 4%, and bus revenue was up 2.5%. It then said in June that it expects to meet its full-year forecast, mainly due to strengthening its bus division, despite passenger journey numbers being down at Govia Thameslink 4% again year-on-year. However, in August, it sort of got a very, like, among all of the other issues with Southern, it got a very bad bit of news in that the Department of Transport awarded the West Midlands franchise, which had been labelled London Midland under Go Ahead. They'd given that to Abellio. I think it was a consortium of Abellio and a couple of other companies, which would begin in December. And that's a huge blow, given that London Midland was its best performing train line and one of the few that was eking out growth. I think Southeastern, which is the other train line that Go Ahead runs now alongside Govia Thameslink, that was also seeing declines in passenger journeys. So London Midland was the only bright spot in its train division, and now that is going to be gone from December. So I think there could be some you know, there could be some significant revisions to its sort of 2017-2018 guidance next Thursday. I think that's going to be the key coming out of that full year update on Thursday. What now does it expect for the next financial year, given that its train lines have been cut from 3 to 2, basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, marvellous. Okay, well, yeah, it's a horrible, messy-looking chart. But having said that, you know, if you're looking to bottom fish, then 17
yeah,
quid...
There is room for it to climb higher.
Yeah, exactly. 17 quid there, it's bouncing off that nicely. It's up to just below 18 quid at the moment, but, you know, it's been up by around about 26, 27 quid in the last year or so. So you never know if there's any bright... is all the bad news priced in? You know, things are often counterintuitive, aren't they? Releases. It's like yesterday when 888 Holdings announced the fine it had. It was 7.8 million, I think. The stock rose because people were scared that they could have the license taken off them. But there we are. Who knows? Connor, thanks for that, fella. Have a nice weekend.
Yep, you too. Thank you.
Okay, today's suggested one for your watchlist is Touchstone Exploration, TXP, submitted by TID83. Thanks for the submission. What does the company do? ONG company, oil and gas company. What's the company's current share price? It's 8.125 pence, market cap of 8.38 million, shares in issue 103 million shares. What revenue, profit, loss does the company generate? Revenue approximately $7 million last quarter, a loss of only $1.8 million in the last quarter after a $5.5 million development investment. How much cash or debt does the company have? $9 million in cash, that's $9 million Canadian dollars. And debt of $15 million, not serviceable until January 2019. It's a five-year term. There's three reasons why someone should add them to their Vox Markets watch list. Number one, flows post 30 days from additional wells expected to be announced imminently, taking production to perhaps plus or minus 1,650 to 1,750 barrels of oil per day. So 1,750 barrels of oil per day. Reason two, low market cap, good cash position, decent share register, and targeting 2,000 barrels of oil per day in 2018. Number three, proved reserves of 8.97 million barrels with net present value, 10% discount after tax, of 72.7 million Canadian dollars, and a reserve life index of 15.1 years. Proved plus probable reserves of 15.7 million barrels with an NPV 10% discount of 130 million Canadian dollars and a reserve life index of 24 years. So that's Touchstone Exploration. TXP is a ticker. Thank you very much, Tid, for submitting that. And by all means, if you know a stock, please, that you think it should be other people's watch list, please submit it and I'll cover it. All right, time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They were, at five, Vast Resources, VST. At four, Gulf Keystone Petroleum, GKP. At three, Petromatad. Now, I see a lot of mentions on that on social media at the moment. MATD. At two, and this one, Empyrean Energy, EME. And number one, most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours is 88 Energy. That's 88. Okay. Time for the top five most liked analysts on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They were at five, Blue Star Capital, update on Satoshi Pay. At four, Angus Energy, update on next exchange bond issue. At three, Motif Bio, company to present at conferences in September. At two, Regency Mines, RGM, partial sale of investment. And number one most liked analysts on the platform in the last 24 hours was from Metal Tiger. And that was Botswana Copper Silver Project Exploration Budget Agreed. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.